DR Power Equipment is the industry leader in field and brush mowers. Their full line of machines are designed to clear acres of tough weeds, woody brush, and saplings up to 3 inches thick, hour after hour, year after year. Just one mow, and you'll agree nothing stops a DR. Visit drpower.com to learn more and shop the sale today.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Now we're going to look at what's going on, and I'm delighted to be joined by Jack Horgan-Jones, who's political reporter with the Irish Times, and Sheila Nocton, who's one of our very own News Talk reporters. You're both very welcome.
Thank you.
Jack, we may as well start with the dreaded protests that are still happening in Coolock. So what's the latest on that?
Yeah, well, there's no getting away from it. All week long, this was a massive deal, kicking off on Tuesday, I think it was, with a violent clash between protesters, qua rioters, some of them became, and Gardaí. There was a digger burnt out on that day. There was a security man hospitalised. And I think that the problem is that this story has kind of bled across the week with more disturbances at the former Crown Paint site on several occasions, including a suspected arson attack midweek. And then last night there was a large-scale protest, which again, going on the reports that are running this morning on the Bulletin, seems to descend into violence with three Gardaí injured in clashes overnight and one sent to hospital. So look, this is, it's like the Alamo, really. You know, it's kind of, it's not going anywhere. Mm. It's a clear and open running conflict. And it doesn't look like either side is going to back down. And if you look at it from the government's point of view, the Minister for Integration, Radhika Gorman, was out this week saying, we're not going to be putting asylum seekers into this building today or tomorrow, but the preparations are underway for a reason and we're not going to be changing course either. And from their perspective, they can't really be seen to be backing down, but there's a head of steam building on the protest side. And the Gardaí are obviously saying that, like, it's being fanned by misinformation and disinformation, and you have people from outside the community coming in as well and driving it. But look, there's no de-escalation points here that I can see. There's no obvious off-ramp. So it's an enormous story. It's one that's been coming. We've seen it up and down the country. And the troubling part is that it's not just confined to Coolock either as well. We've seen attacks on the asylum seekers who are encamped on City Quay. We've seen something similar happening in Phibsborough. We saw the alleged threats made against Mary Lou McDonald and Drew Harris, which are the subject of court proceedings now. And that's just off the top of my head, you know, and that's just this week. So we know that migration is changing and warping the politics of the state, and this is a very visible example of that.
Right. Are you worried, Sheila? I mean, you're watching it closely, obviously.
Yeah, so I was out in Coolock during the week and reporting on this. And funnily enough, I was saying before we came in, I got texts yesterday to warn me not to go last night because it was going to escalate. Some of those were from, unidentifiable people online who were telling me not to go out of just not wanting to see reporters there, but also people who I might know who live nearby and said that they were worried about what was going to escalate there as well. So I think even when you're being sent out there now, you're trying to keep a low profile. And but then you also have this mix of they constantly will say they want to tell the truth or they want the truth to be out there, and you will offer an interview or you will offer the chance to speak, and you get an awful lot of abuse for that as well. We saw that in Kitty Holland's piece when she went out to Darndale and tried to speak to people as well. And that's something that I think a lot of us reporters and journalists are facing. And I mean, my social media this week has been very, very nasty, and you'd want to be able to put it to the back of your mind. But I don't know how we're supposed to get, as you say, any sort of meeting in the middle or any sort of a reconciliation when there is no talking to either side.
I bet you never thought as a journalist you had to be brave. Like, it must be scary to do that. And all these attacks you are getting personally is atrocious, really, isn't it?
And it's funny, we do training, and we go out and we went out to Gormanstown and we saw what the public order unit have to do, the type of training they do. They put us kind of standing as close to them as we could so that we could start to judge when they're about to move, maybe hear some of the commands that the Gardaí get so that we as journalists are aware of it. But when you're in that setting, things become so chaotic that it's still hard to even navigate that. When I was sitting there the last day, I was obviously trying not to identify myself again, and I was handed a face shield and a face mask in case I got pepper sprayed. And, while I was like, oh no, I'm okay, I did think, but then again, I could get caught in it. So
it's
yeah.
just horrible to hear this, because all you're doing is your job. You're trying to, and it's very important, by the way. And it's great that you journalists are keeping going on this, because you could easily say, to hell with this. I'm not going to go out there. You know?
Yeah. And I think that I sometimes I'd love to do a piece where you could explain to people what our role is. We come in and an editor tells us this is a story that you're doing today, and you've responsibility to go out to do that. And then you get told, oh, but you don't care about the Irish homelessness, or you don't care about this. Like, a dentist doesn't get told he's not doing fillings anymore because he hasn't done fillings on one day because there was no appointments for it.
Exactly.
You know, we do what we're told.
Of course, yeah.
And we protect ourselves the best we can. But I suppose maybe I don't know if there's room for that kind of conversation at the moment.
Fintan O'Toole, I remember I read, so I was getting attacked, by the way, in the pandemic a lot by people, you know. And Fintan said, put your blinkers on. just keep going. That's the phrase. Jack, have you had any attacks or any malignancy on? You must have, I presume.
From time to time, yeah. I mean, when myself and Hugh O'Connell wrote the COVID book that we did a couple of years ago, we got a good bit of backlash around that. And there were some kind of quote unquote citizen journalists who went to some of the events that we were promoting the book at, and we were followed around with camera phones and stuff like that. And there was some social media stuff around that. I mean, I'm kind of I'm more within the environs of Leinster House, so unless the protesters pay a visit, as they did last September, right. We don't get exposed to it as much as beat reporters do, who are sent out to actually cover these things. But look, you know, it's all part of the same kind of structure and the same kind of scene, and derived from the same kind of worldview, which would unfortunately lump, you know, the mainstream media in with, you know, the state forces, the guards, politicians, insiders, I suppose it's most broadly constructed as and conceived of as representative of, you know, a cosseted insider elite, and, you know, in the classic kind of populist worldview, one that is hostile to the interests of the true people or the real people. And I think that you see that everywhere. You see that all around the world. It's a classic structure of populist politics. And you see it in the US with Trump, and you see it here as well. And there's a couple of pieces in the papers today which look at, I suppose, the wider hinterland where this politics flourishes. And Sheila mentioned one of them, Kitty Holland, in her own paper today in the Irish Times today, has a very good piece looking at the kind of the structural inequalities and the long lasting poverty that exists in around places like Coolock. And that makes for fertile ground for people who would, you know, peddle these kind of worldviews and politics. And I think that's one of the reasons why people do tend to kind of congregate around flashpoints like this. I mean, it's clearly the case that not everyone who voices concerns is a racist or far right or something like that, you know. And it's clearly the case that not everyone who attends and in some cases throws bottles or sticks or bricks at Gardaí is, you know, fully convinced of this worldview either. But clearly there's an audience out there for it, and there's enough disaffection and alienation and people who are flung far from the kind of centre of politics and feel they don't have a stake in society, that, you know, they're susceptible to these kind of messages.
It's interesting you say that. I spoke to somebody during the week, and he told me, because he was speaking about this, he said he grew up in Crumlin, and he said back at that time when he was there with his family, he absolutely had the same view as what many of the people who were in Coolock protesting had this week. He said, you're brought up to believe that the Gardaí are against you. You're brought up to believe that everything is against you. He said, and it was totally ingrained. And it was only when his family moved out to Kildare and he just lived in a different community and was socialising with different people that he realised not everybody hates the Gardaí, not everybody sees them in this way, and it slightly changed his view. So it must be difficult when that is what you're hearing, what you're learning, and when you're brought up, as we've seen in many of these articles, when you're brought up in a space of deprivation, it is hard when that's all you're exposed to.
It's interesting as well that a lot of these areas, if you take the clock back 5 or 6 years, were the same kind of hotbeds of protest against the water charges. And that construction of, you know, insert area name here says no.
Yeah.
The first time I ever came across that was covering the water charges, you know?
Yeah.
So is it kind of part of that same political energy, that same kind of dislocation, that same sense of alienation, that the state is not for me, the system's not for me, and I'm rebelling and kicking out against that.
The only thing I will say, there was one line in one of the articles by Catherine Conlon that says, how many are coming from rentals with no prospect of buying a home? I mean, I can't even afford to rent. I'm living at home with no prospect of buying a home, and I don't throw bricks at Gardaí.
Exactly,
you know.
And I think it was interesting that the teacher kind of got into this as well. during the week, because there's this refrain from a lot of the kind of local reps, which is critical of the level of engagement that's gone on from the government. And I think that there's a fair criticism there, but I think there's a limit to what you can reasonably expect engagement and consultation to achieve. And I think that Simon Harris is saying this up in Glenties, that if you're going to throw a petrol bomb, you know, you're not going to be consulted out of that decision.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, let's hope things improve. Are you hopeful, Jack? What's going to happen in the next?
I'm not actually, to be honest.
No, you think it's getting worse?
I think that not to be too dour about it, but like I think that this is an important moment in our politics.
Key moment, isn't it? Yeah,
it is. Yeah, no, it is. And look, we've seen perhaps that, you know, it can be difficult to achieve a kind of overnight electoral success. And we didn't see any kind of massive breakthrough for far-right or anti-migrant voices in the local and European elections. But it is changing.
Yeah.
It's moving the centre ground of politics. And there's footholds and toeholds emerging. So, look, I think this is one of the issues that is going to define the general election and the next few years of politics in Ireland. Right.
We'll move on. Shida, I'd look at the Taoiseach. Have you seen this story? He wants to be the Taoiseach again. Isn't that nice? What do you make of that story?
Yeah, so Micheál Martin, he's come out to say he wants to be Taoiseach again, and that he insists it's his only focus now is the next general election. So that's putting to bed any rumours that he's going to go to be the president. So he was obviously saying this as he was over in Ethiopia and Kenya during the week. So, I mean, I don't know if that comes as a surprise to anybody, does it? He's been pretty like steadfast on that over the last few months, if not years. And as we were saying earlier, he's the only leader of the coalition to still be there. So why wouldn't he want to?
What's he doing in Kenya? He said this, I think he was interviewed in Kenya, wasn't he? And he came out with this. He must be there in very important business.
To meet with aid and development partners. And our own reporter, Andrew Louth, has been out there following him around.
Yes, so, very good.
I suppose it's just seeing how things are development over there, if there's any links that we can establish here with Ireland as well. And I don't know, did you see the photos of him on their first electric tractor?
I did. That's the thing that struck
fabulous
me.
Fabulous looking.
Very interesting. an Irish made electric. I wonder why haven't we got that in Ireland? There's an Irish made electric tractor, isn't there? Yeah. That they're demonstrating.
Yeah, it's a gas looking thing. Obviously we're on radio, but you know, it looks like a jalopy from the kind of 1920s. It's like very very light. Yeah. But anyway, right. There's an Irish company making these tractors, and it's one of the reasons they're there. Look, obviously he wants, in some ways, it's a, you know, senior politician wants to be most senior politician, like hold the front page. But like the Micheál Martin's political, you know, tenacity is remarkable. Like, you know,
it is remarkable, isn't it?
As Sheila said, he's obviously he's the last man standing
of the
coalition leaders that brought together the current coalition in 2020. And I don't think anyone would have said that would be the case at the start. In fact, when he became Taoiseach, first of all, it was an unlikely story to happen in the first place, because he obviously assumed the reins of Fianna Fáil at the lowest ebb in the party's history. He was widely predicted to be the first Fianna Fáil leader that would never be Taoiseach. He rebuked those predictions, but he had this restive parliamentary party. He had a big rump of rebel TDs who didn't believe him, didn't want him, were taking pot shots, and it looked at some stage like someone was going to come for him during COVID in particular. and you know, there'd be a night of the long knives, but he faced them all down.
Yeah.
And now he's in a more secure position than almost any other political leader in Ireland. And he heads into the general election unchallenged from within his own party, and with a decent chance of coming back and probably being a rotating Taoiseach again. And, you know, this guy was originally put in cabinet when I was in primary school.
I know, isn't it amazing? and there he is on an electric tractor in Kenya. Who'd have thought? There's no controversies about that, hopefully. But he's a true survivor, isn't he, Jack?
You never know. You never know where controversy is going to emerge from. But I don't see an electric tractor gate in his future.
Not necessarily. No, there's no controversies there. We must move on to the other story that's... I'm sick of this, by the way. I have to say, the Trump
thing. Yeah.
Of course, we can't resist it, can we?
Yeah.
I mean, looking at the US situation, actually, let's start with you. So it's still there, isn't it? And now we got Biden's got COVID and he made his big speech. So.
Although Biden coming out to say that he is going nowhere, and going out to this weekend, when I was leaving work on Thursday, I was told I was going to have loads to report on when I came in on Sunday because Biden was going to be gone. But it looks like he's still holding on, still, you know, saying that he's going to contest the race. And actually, I don't know if anybody listened to much of the reports from Josh, who was our reporter who was over in Milwaukee during the week. But Republicans there saying they want him to face Biden. They want Trump to face Biden. They think he's a far better chance. But even having said that, if it was Kamala Harris who was to stand in, should Joe Biden sidestep aside, I don't think people are really feel that threatened about her. She hasn't been pushed out much over the last few years. it's only in recent times we're starting to see little clips of her on TikTok or YouTube. And I thought, I didn't even know what she really looked like until now, when there's these questions over Biden. So, yeah. And I mean, Trump now has slightly changed his tact as well, and is talking about unity, and maybe some of the more divisive things that he always would have gone on about, they're kind of going further yeah. down in the speech, or, you know, less discussed.
But
so
I'm no expert, obviously. And I'm like everybody else, I'm watching it every 5 minutes as an update, isn't there? You would have thought Biden would have stood down at this stage. And reading the old Tom Toms this week, Obama came out, didn't he? And now he's got COVID. He'd have got a reason to stand to one side. And yet he's come out saying, no, I'm still going on with it. Why is that, do you think, Jim? What's going on? Is it because they feel he's the only one who can beat Trump?
I wonder, do they feel that they just don't have the time to make up, to get somebody out there enough and get them enough, I suppose, publicity and backing? However, I wonder, is there any chance that they could see it as, look, we've accepted that this wasn't the right candidate, so we've accepted that, and now we'll put forward someone else. Yeah. But I think it's what you're saying there. I think they think he's the best chance, but I'm not sure, is he? Not with J.D. Vance coming along as well now, and he has so much support, it seems, as well. So apparently those who were on the fence now with the announcement of J.D. Vance are now starting to go towards Trump. So
I mean, Jack, I was waiting for Trump's speech. We all saw, what's he going to say? Is he going to be more mellow? And you've got a great piece in the Irish Times today looking at that. So tell us about that, because they hoped he might change slightly maybe and move more towards the middle ground, but he hasn't. Is he doubling down on everything anyway?
I mean, in some ways he did. Like, it was a different kind of Trump speech. I got a weird assignment on Thursday. They asked me to get up in the middle of the night and watch the thing. So I got up at 3 a.m. and watched.
Good man. Thank you, Jack, on our behalf.
Yeah. For an hour and a half. And like, in some ways it was a dramatically different Trump speech, certainly at the start, because he was talking about things like unity and being a president for all Americans, not half the country. And this is a man who has built a politics which is rooted in division, and telling people that, you know, there are others and outsiders who are responsible for your travails, and only I can protect you from the rotten cabal. The same kind of politics that we were talking about earlier on. So seeing him and hearing him talk about that was interesting. And he said that he'd rewritten his speech in light of what happened. And then he had this fascinating, like, it was a fascinating account of being shot. You know, unique, gripping, really, discussion of what it's like to be shot and be a presidential candidate. And then it just went into the usual kind of Trumpisms, you know, his preoccupations, his obsessions with trade, with China, bigging up strongmen leaders overseas, Hungary's Viktor Orban, Kim Jong-un in North Korea. You know, he didn't have a go at Biden. Well, he did once, but he didn't go into any of the kind of memory problems or anything. So, but like, this guy as a politician, his instincts only go in one way. And when he's mollified after the shooting and people have been kind of generally praising him and he's been getting good press, he's in pretty good form. So he wasn't railing in the way, he wasn't as angry an address as you might usually expect from him. But, you know, in the end, it just descended into this kind of rambling, straight out of central casting, Trumpist diatribe, which just left me thinking that, like, both the candidates in this race, they're pretty underwhelming. Yeah. And you know, geez, I sound very dire this morning.
Jack, you need to take a chill pill.
Politics in Ireland is sunny.
You talk about rambling. You have a bit. I was reading your article, and there's just one
talk
line.
Rambling. Shut up, Jack.
You have like one little thing highlighted. We will not have men playing women's sports. That will end immediately.
Yeah.
And like, I just, as you and you kind of comment that, didn't mention any of the other things.
Well, he didn't,
just threw that in.
But that's interesting. And like, and just to dwell on that for a moment, like, I mean, culture war issues. The gender debate, abortion, I mean, that is something that I think is truly galvanizing to Trump's base. And when he said that thing about men playing women's sports, it got a big reaction, but he didn't dwell on it. He didn't mention abortion at all. Yeah. He's more into the peccadilloes of talking about trade relationships and how, you know, the US is being screwed over by outside actors, which I'm not sure that people are particularly interested in.
Surely people,
beating up on immigrants just over and again, the immigrant trope was just there so much. You know, like construing them as violent rapists and murderers, all the rest of it.
What do you make of this guy? I'd never heard of Vance, of course. Had you ever heard of Vance?
No, I hadn't.
No, he's called a hillbilly. There's some dismissive term.
He'd written a book,
hadn't he?
Yeah. About I think basically kind of the either the history or the past of being a hillbilly. But yeah. I think his thing is that he was He was a Democrat and he spoke very openly about against Trump and now then went to Trump and said, no, look, I was convinced by the media. The media made me hate you and I don't actually hate you and is now on Trump's
side. Best
they're saying he's extremely well educated. He has, I think he has a law degree and I think it's his intelligence and intellect that people are saying is the threat then to the Democrats on the other side that he's, and he's well liked, he's young.
Yeah. And let's see what happens this week. There'll be more developments. Now, we'll lighten it slightly, Jackie. Are you ready? Just to get your mood a bit.
No.
The Strictly Come Dancing meltdown.
Go on. A remarkable story.
Give me your opinion on
this. You say light.
Forget it. Mind you, having said that, it's quite serious.
It's dark.
I'm dying for something a bit light on this rainy Saturday morning.
But neither myself, she had really come across this before we were talking about it on the way in. So effectively, it looks like, you know, the bell of the ball for a decade or more in terms of the BBC's programming schedule, Strictly Come Dancing, the most wholesome thing in the TV pages, you know, family time TV, ain't nothing wrong with it. It looks like there's a kind of rotten culture underscoring a lot of it. There's these allegations going back years of, you know, basically workplace bullying, but it doesn't stop at that. There's people who've In just this recent series, one of the professional dancers is alleged to have like hit and kicked out at his celebrity partner, and there's just this litany of stuff going backwards. So there's a good piece in the mail today. I think it's imported from the UK Mail, but it's just getting into the whole sorry tale, really, going back years of this kind of this rotten culture, and how the BBC all of a sudden is rocked by this and wondering what to do with its flagship programming.
If
all of a sudden the shine has come off it in such a dramatic way.
This wonderful show that I don't watch it myself, but many people really enjoy it, don't they? And the allegations of one choreographer kicking someone, this kind of thing. Well,
I know, and it's funny you say that. I don't watch it. My dad loves Strictly Come Dancing and we'll like run into the sitting room to watch it, but likes it for the dancing and
Shirley
the spectacle
into the sky.
And he waltzes in but not really, really enjoys it, and like you said, it's just such a feel good thing. It's watching but to hear it sounds almost like the BBC, because they knew about these allegations, they saw it as a bit of a laugh and it was a bit of a joke, and it's only now but also these things were done on camera. They have video footage of some of these incidents happening, of the shouting. One person reports being screamed at and being told they'd be dragged across the floor if they didn't, was it stand on one foot? Like, this stuff is being filmed. So I don't know what kind of culture there was there that they felt that it was acceptable to speak like that when they publicly, basically, when you have a camera on you. And I don't know how any viewer, maybe they do. Look, if you're one of these people who can separate art and life, maybe you can watch it and still enjoy it for the spectacle that it is. But will you have the same trust in it that it's this beautiful family thing where everybody is supporting each other?
Yeah, I know. It's a very bad sign if this is in trouble, isn't it, Jacqueline? Do you think there's a bigger question here about bullying in the workplace? It speaks to that, doesn't it? Because, like, maybe very rigorous choreographers do shout at dancers. I don't know. They can't be kicking them, obviously.
But yeah.
I'm wondering, it does sound pretty serious, doesn't it, though?
Yeah, well, I mean, I suppose it's one of those environments where it's about performance and there's a huge amount of pressure associated with that. And you often see in those kind of high-pressured workspaces that tempers can become frayed. Like, I mean, you know, like you often hear about, you know, chefs in kitchens, for example. You know, there's effing and blinding. I've been watching
already.
The Bear this week, you know, and there's no shortage of toxic workplace culture there. I mean, it's true of newsrooms as well, you know.
They shout at me in here. Behind the screen is now shouting at me. This segment up.
There's legend stories from Dublin newsrooms of people being like slammed up against doors and windows and all the rest of it. And people under pressure make these kind of, you know, it lends itself to these cultures, but like it's a big problem when it comes out into the open, and it's a big problem for BBC.
I studied drama and theatre studies, and I realised as I went through it, because I thought I wanted to be an actor, and as I went through the long rehearsals, and like that, people getting tired, worn out,
irritable,
and tempers frayed and impatience low, that I just wasn't, I wasn't able for that kind
really,
of environment. That wasn't even that bad. That was kind of normal. So I think you're on something there with these high-pressure environments where people are tired and worn out and doing long hours.
Well, listen, thanks very much, Sheila, for that, and Jack as well. Very interesting as ever.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
DR Power Equipment is the industry leader in field and brush mowers. Their full line of machines are designed to clear acres of tough weeds, woody brush, and saplings up to 3 inches thick, hour after hour, year after year. Just one mow, and you'll agree nothing stops a DR. Visit drpower.com to learn more and shop the sale today.